Intervju Radija Študent.
V današnjem Eres intervjuju prisluhnite pogovoru z nemškim pihalcem Petrom Brucmanom, ki je pred dnevi nekje v parku Tivoli povedal kaj, o tem in onem in še čem. Znanega strojničarja ter avtorja likovnih del, ki bodo od danes dalje razstavljena v MGLC-ju, bo moč občutiti in slišati na letošnjem jazz festivalu Ljubljana. In to večkrat. V naslednjih minutah pa prisluhnite pogovoru, ki ga je z njim pred dnevi posnel Anže Zorman.
Well, hello Mr. Brocman. I'm very glad to be able to be hearing you in the week to follow. And I'm also very glad for this chance of interview. And I'll start by asking, you know, you've done a number of interviews in your life. How much do you take them as a PR obligation, and maybe also, or do they also function as a way to get some worthwhile insights or expressions of what you're doing?
No, the main reason I'm doing what I'm doing is that I like to do it. I have fun. And that's the main important thing, otherwise I wouldn't do it. And I think with my music I think there is a kind of little message I can tell, or a story of my life. I can't put in words. If I would be able to do that, I would write books, but music is my medium, so. And on the other hand, the painting too, of course. But we talk about music nowadays, maybe. And I like to do it. I like to be with all kind of people together on stage. And I think it's a good example of showing that working together is a good possibility to do things.
But let's say in the past decades, you probably had more interviews than you made albums, and you made a lot of albums. And do you maybe notice any trends or changes in the musical discourse and focus on music that the people, the journalists take when they talk to you?
I mean, I'm on the road now for nearly 50 years, and I would call myself stupid if I wouldn't have changed in all the years what I'm doing.
The questions, actually, the focus of the journalists, that has it changed?
Since my early years, I have the image as a wild, loud, aggressive player, which might be true to a certain degree. I like when it sounds, when there is a lot of sound there. And on the other hand, I'm a very quiet person too. And if you follow my work, you will see in all the times some balladesque things and so on. But for the journalist of earlier times, I just was the loud, aggressive player. And I think meanwhile, the journalist or the younger generation of journalists have a different view, which I, of course, welcome very much, because it's quite a wide range I think I cover, and I think the new media makes it possible for journalists to know more about, if they really want to know, they can do that.
Mm-hmm. What about the musical approach of your playmates? You played with a number of generations, and when you started, you were, you know, playing more against something, you know, against the conventions, the formalisms, and now the musicians, in a way, are forced to be maybe more affirmative, even when starting playing improvised music, compared to, let's say, when you started.
Yeah, I mean, when we started the music, of course, the first thing was to destroy what was there. I mean, I grew up with music of the hard bop times, and that was for us at a certain moment too formalistic, and of course you had to destroy things. And in the same moment you build up new things, and if you build up new things you have to find a form for that. And the younger generation now, let's mention Mats Gustafsson or Ken van der Mark as saxophone players, they grew up already with that, what we had done, and they take it as given. What we had to work on, for them it's there already, and what I expect from them is just to take what we have done further. The problem is that what I and my comrades had tried to do in the early times, it's getting nowadays is cool. And that's the wrong thing. We never wanted that, and I still don't want it. And I think it's fucking stupid if I have a school of Bratzmann players in Japan or somewhere else. No, I always, whenever I have a chance to talk to them and to work with them, I try, you have to find your own way. Fuck this Bratzmann, he's completely unimportant. Find your own way. But now in the conservatories and music schools, free jazz is a part of the educational program, which is completely nonsense. You can't teach that thing. You have to experience it for yourself. You have to be on the road. You have to face different situations every night. That's where you learn things, not at school.
And in the last 5 decades, have you ever felt at a loss of words, at a loss of musical language, that you found yourself in a blind alley? Did it happen to you in the last?
Oh, sure, yeah? Sure. It happens all the time. Sometimes you really get desperate, and sometimes it goes hand in hand with having no work at all, and no means no money. You can't pay the rent, and I had in my little career quite often the situation where I said, "Fuck hell, I sell the horns. I stop. But that doesn't help. You go on because you like it. And the only way of getting out of that holes is to work and to find other people to work with. For example, the time I started to build up the Last Exit band, it was music-wise in Europe was not much happening. So I was lucky to find Laswell and Shen Jackson, Sonny Sherrock, that we could go in a kind of other direction. And that's what I'm still trying to get people together. For example, I work a lot with Keiji Aino, who comes from a complete different direction of music, but he shows me and he gives me the possibility for myself to discover new areas of music, which is always very important to do.
A few years ago, you also recorded an album in Yemen, and I always thought of your music as having some roots in Eastern music. How did that find away into a musical vocabulary.
Now, yeah, that's a longer story, this Yemen thing. We had some connections to some of the Yemenite musicians, and I tried to get familiar with that. But when we arrived, all these musicians were working somewhere in the Emirates or somewhere where some money is to earn. Yeah. So the people, the musicians, were left in Sana'a. Were just musicians, had no idea about improvising. Michael Zerang and I tried to make something out of it, and I think it might be not the highlight of my recording career, but it was actually a good time to spend with them, because I learned a lot for myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm for sure interested in North African music, in the music of the Middle East, and I mean, I bring Mokhtar Ganya to the festival, and I was working years ago with his older brother, Mahmoud, and that's what I like, because they have another way of thinking about time and timing, and they have another way to move. So it's always interesting to have somebody around who brings you in a different situation, because you have to react and you have to do things differently.
And when you look back, do you feel that all your albums were worthy of being recorded?
If I don't know how many, but I for sure would find some. I would say, my God, we could have missed that. Of course, mm-hmm. Of course.
I'm wondering, because you know, jazz music has, in a way, another aesthetical mode of musical production than, let's say, other genres. Because you don't, let's say, see great guitar players with such a huge output. And could one say that jazz is in a way less dependent on the imperative of the new than other musics?
You know, the function of jazz music in the economic way changed completely since rock and roll took over. I mean, in let's say until the 50s, early 60s, jazz music, especially on the American market, was an economic factor. People made money out of that. And bands like Ellington or Count Basie, they made money, or at least the producers made money, the record companies made money. And since the rock and roll took over that mass audiences, jazz music is in a way more independent from that. So we have to create our own market, we have to create our own audiences, and of course as a follow of that, we produce our own records. I mean, I think I was the first one in Europe, started that in the mid of 60s, and together with ICP people, with Incas people, but we are still doing that. And nowadays, with all the new medias and the new techniques, it's easy for young people to organize themselves and create their own products and create their own audiences, which of course has another side. It's much too many productions on a very small market. Mm-hmm. That's the other side of it.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, do you follow roughly the current musical output of other musicians?
Not really. I have not the time to do that. I have to spend my time for more important things for me. But of course, I see what my younger colleagues are doing. What Mats Gustafsson, for example, is producing one thing after the other. Ken van der Mark is doing a lot. Paul Nielsen is on any second CD or LP, what is out. I understand that, but that doesn't mean that I think it's right. I think we should, I would like a situation where there would be a record company tells me go to the studio for 3 days and do this and that. But the economic is not there for that anymore. The studios are gone. There's no record company with some money in the background. So you have to do things. You have to do things yourself. And I understand the younger guys that they want whatever they produce should be on the market. But if you think about the market, the worldwide market is not growing very much. It stays all the same. It's changing here and there. And sometimes the market in Japan is growing, or there is a new smaller market coming up in China or in South American countries. Brazil is getting interesting, or Nicaragua or whatever. But it's all small. We make music not for a mass audience. It's a small audience, and we have to deal with that. So to produce one after another is not the right thing to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what about China? You also recorded an album with Chinese musicians.
I went there a couple of times. I met some Chinese musicians. Of course, they need more time to develop. But there is this one young saxophone player in Beijing who travels a lot, who knows, travels a lot in the States or in Europe. So he knows quite a bit.
That's Li Tichikao, or?
Pardon?
What's his name?
Don't ask me names, I always forget names. But that's the guy you're talking about. And I go in the fall, I go back to China with my Swiss trio, with Michael Wertmüller and Pleiakas for a little tour, and next year in spring I will be there again. So that is an interesting thing to see how things develop. And I was always interested, the main interest instrument-wise are drummers for me, and the main important people are always have been drummers. But this quartet we, or the double duo we have now, it's the first time we do it. I played recently in the States with Chet Taylor, and I know Ken since more than 15 years, I think. And Hamid was my first guy in Chicago. So we will see what's happening.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, usually the improvised music is mostly about dialogue and communication, but when there are two such distinctive personalities or instruments, then that as you and Ken, does it sometimes turn into a duel? Or does that happen?
I mean, being on stage is always a fight. It's not always just we are good old friends. Of course we are. But being on stage is a big part of it, is fighting for your own space. But on the other hand, you always have to have respect for the others, give them time. And the main part of the music anyway is listening to each other. And sometimes not to play is the best decision. So we know that. I mean, we all experienced enough. And we will see what's happening. I mean, we go and play, and Hopefully you'll say it was a good concert.
Well, thank you very much for your time. There's a queue behind me for the next interview, so we'll be dialoguing in the next week through different means.
Yeah, we will see.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure. Bye. Thank you.
Intervju Radija Študent.